live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, September 18th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
It's all about the Federal Reserve as Wall Street awaits moves on interest rates and overnight lending.
The New York Fed prepares its second repo operation after its first in a decade.
And policymakers decide on another mid-cycle adjustment or the first of several moves in an easing cycle.
Senate Democrats take to the floor to address gun legislation. Plus, Israel heads into the unknown as elections are deadlocked. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stash, Aaron Sports. Easy win for the Yankees over the Angels. The Mets won at Colorado, and a giant quarterback change. Daniel Jones is in. Eli Manning's out.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks struggling for direction this morning. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are lower, down 4 points. Dow futures down 37. NASDAQ futures down 12. The DAX in Germany is up less than a tenth of a percent this morning. CAC in Paris, little change. FTSE 100 up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 7/32, yield 1.77%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.70%. COMEX gold is down 0.25% or $4.10 at $15.09.30 an ounce. The euro, 1.1040 against the dollar. The yen is at 108.23. Nathan.
Karen, it's a big day for the Fed with a policy decision and more repo operations on the schedule. We begin with a look at today's rate decision with Michael McKee in our Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
It's not so much what they do as what they plan to do next. A 25 basis point rate cut is baked into the decision, but is that the last of a mid-cycle correction, as Chairman Jay Powell put it in July, or do trade and geopolitical uncertainty mean more cuts are likely? It's a communication challenge for Powell. Get it wrong and yields and the dollar may rise, offsetting the Fed's easing. One more issue. Does the Fed need to change its balance sheet strategy, given the backup in repo rates this week? In Washington, Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Michael, thank you. The rate decision comes after that backup in repo rates forced the New York Fed to take action yesterday, and they're set to do so again today. We get more from Bloomberg's Doug Christner.
A stunning jump in short-term rates pointed to a scarcity of cash in the financial system. The knock-on effect sent the Fed's key Fed funds rate to the upper end of its targeted range at 2.25%. So the New York Fed added liquidity by buying more than $53 billion in securities. And then late Tuesday, the Fed said it will do it again and conduct a second repo operation with as much as $75 billion available. I'm Doug Christner, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Doug. Yesterday's money market operation was the first from the Fed in a decade, though analysts say the spike in short-term rates is not evidence of a financial crisis. Bloomberg's Tracy Alloway reports.
There are some structural issues that have caused tightness in the repo market, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we shouldn't worry. In fact, this says something incredibly negative about the Federal Reserve's ability to control front-end rates, i.e. short-term money market lending rates, which is, you know, if you think about the Federal Reserve losing control of monetary policy, that's concerning.
The move from the Fed also shows Wall Street struggling to absorb record Treasury sales to fund the growing U.S. budget deficit.
The rate on repurchase agreements went as high as 10%, about four times more than last week's level. It's an issue compounded by reduced trading in the markets since safeguards were put in place after the financial crisis. Tony James is executive vice chairman at Blackstone Group.
This kind of thing used to be common. They haven't had to do it in a long time. But I think it's important to remember the rate spike looks very scary, but it's only overnight. So the actual cost of the system is not high. It's more of a concern to dealers. It's a technical problem, very short term, that the Fed's addressing. I think the Fed wants stability right now above all else. So I'm not surprised that they stepped in here.
And we'll see what happens when they step in again this morning with the New York Fed's repo operation set for the 8 a.m. hour on Wall Street.
All right, let's turn to the oil market now. Crude is stabilizing after Monday's 14% gain and yesterday's 6% decline. Saudi Arabia is quickly restoring production following last weekend's attack. Bloomberg's Anthony DePaula caught up with the CEO of Saudi Aramco in Jeddah.
By the end of September, Abqaiq will be at capacity.
And you were able to meet your shipments to international customers?
We are able to meet our shipment to international customers When the supply was interrupted, we used our storage facility in Kingdom and out of Kingdom.
We also caught up with Saudi Arabia's finance minister, who says exports will keep flowing as normal.
We are back online, so the interruption is, in terms of economy, in terms of revenue, is zero, because we have used our reserves only for a couple of days before we are back online last night and today.
Now, despite reassurances from Saudi Arabia, oil is trading around 8% higher than pre-attack levels. Checking prices now, West Texas Intermediate's down 0.7% on the session, or 43 cents at $58.91 a barrel, while Brent is down 0.5% at $64.22.
We're seeing muted action in the markets to start the day. Overnight in Asia, stocks struggled for direction ahead of today's Fed decision. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Japan's TOPIX index fell for the first time in 9 sessions, snapping its longest winning streak in almost 2 years as energy explorers and producers fell after oil prices retreated. Data released out of Japan showed a further contraction in exports, with shipments falling the most since January, notching up a 9th straight month of declines in August. Consumer stocks rose in China, lifting the CSI 300 by 0.5%, while markets were also higher in Taiwan, South Korea, and Indonesia. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Juliet. On the corporate front, shares of FedEx are down more than 11% in early trading after the company slashed its profit outlook. It's the latest sign the trade war is dragging down corporate results. Lee Klaskow covers FedEx for Bloomberg Intelligence.
It has to do with global trade slowing down. It has to do with taking longer to turn around the TNT acquisition that it made a couple of years ago. And we really don't know what's going on in China. You know, there's a lot of headline risk there with some of the news out of China in terms of their wrongful deliveries and what that actually might mean to business.
FedEx says the slowdown is driven by trade tensions and policy uncertainty, and it's taking steps to cut capacity.
Meanwhile, in Europe, concerns over the auto industry are deepening. Car sales fell sharply in August, dropping more than 8%. That's the steepest monthly decline so far this year. Right now, S&P futures are down almost 4 points. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks, Karen. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to get more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Senate Democrats took to the chamber's floor for roughly 5 hours last night to address gun legislation. Republican Senate Leader Mitch McConnell said earlier in the day he's waiting on the president.
We need some guidance from the president about what kind of proposal that would make a difference he would actually sign into law.
Connecticut Democratic Senator Chris Murphy said that's no excuse.
Senator McConnell has a different copy of the Constitution than I have. My copy of the Constitution says that none of us are required to get permission slips from the president before we act.
Meanwhile, Attorney General William Barr is expected to return to Capitol Hill today for more gun discussions. The latest nationwide poll finds Elizabeth Warren gaining ground on Joe Biden in the Democratic presidential race. Bloomberg's Bob Moon has the story.
The NBC News Wall Street Journal poll of National Democratic primary voters is the first major survey since last week's debate in Houston, which featured a smaller field of 10 candidates. Biden leads with 31%, with Warren at 25%, and with the help of a groundswell of enthusiasm among liberal Democrats, she's pulled ahead of Sanders, who's in third place at 14%. Among liberal Democrats, Warren leads with 36%, 17 points higher than either Biden or Sanders. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Israel heads into the unknown after Tuesday's elections. Bloomberg's Ivan Levingston in Tel Aviv explains.
Israel's second national election this year looks set to produce a dramatic deadlock, as neither Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu nor his top rival, former military leader Benny Gantz, appeared to have an easy path to form a governing coalition. The lack of a decisive victory would be a stunning setback for Netanyahu. Political horse trading will be heavy in the coming days as the leaders try to line up the most support. In Tel Aviv, Ivan Levingston, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Iran has sent the U.S. a note denying it had a role in the attacks on Saudi oil facilities and warning that it would respond to any action against it. The Iranian Students News Agency reported today the message was sent to the U.S. via the Swiss diplomatic mission, which acts as a communication channel. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's John Steshower.
Nathan, win number 99 on the season for the Yankees was an easy one. 8-0 at the stadium over the Angels. A 6-run fourth inning capped by a long 3-run homer by Gleyber Torres, his team leading 38 of the season. The big story, the return of Luis Severino. Yankees' best starter the past two seasons. He had not thrown a single pitch this year. He returned and threw four scoreless innings for Aaron Boone.
Obviously pitched great tonight. Another huge step back for him. Really excited for him and how well he threw the ball. What I loved is just how in control he was with his delivery. You know, the stuff was very good. It wasn't like he was reaching for it or trying to do it. He really stayed within himself the entire night and really, you know, gave us four outstanding innings.
Severino appears back. Dellin Betances, the reliever who also had been out all season, returned on Sunday through eight pitches. It turns out he tore his Achilles, so he's done for the year. Mets won at Colorado 6-1. They had three home runs, including Pete Alonso's major league leading 48th of the season. Should be an interesting day at Giants practice. A few more media types than usual. They'll want to talk to Giants coach Pat Shurmur, who made the big quarterback change announced yesterday. They'll want to talk to rookie Daniel Jones as he gets ready for his first NFL start Sunday at Tampa Bay. And they'll certainly want to talk to Eli Manning. It is the end of an era. Did get benched for one game 2 years ago. That's the only game that Manning has ever missed in 16 years. And this benching appears to be a lot more permanent. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Steshower. Nathan?
And John, the NFL continues to be a ratings winner. Four games finished among the Nielsen Company's top 12 shows last week, led by the Sunday night matchup between Philadelphia and Atlanta. Add that to results from America's Got Talent, and NBC won the network ratings race, averaging 5.7 million viewers in primetime. S&P futures down 4 points ahead of the Fed decision. Dow futures down 33. NASDAQ futures down 11 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Let Burden create innovative tax solutions to benefit your family and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com. Burden Accountants and Advisors. They listen, they solve, they do.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks are drifting as investors mark time until the Federal Reserve concludes its policy meeting, at which officials are expected to cut interest rates again and possibly move further to calm overnight lending markets. Treasuries are pushing higher with the dollar, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 4 points, Dow futures down 32, NASDAQ futures down 11, the DAX in Germany's up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 10/32nd, yield 1.76%, yield on the 2-year 1.70%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.8% or 48 cents at $58.86 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.2% or $3.10 at $15.10.30 an ounce. The euro, 1.1038 against the dollar. The yen at 108.20. And today we are watching for reports on housing starts and building permits out at 8:30 Wall Street time. The Federal Reserve rate decision is at 2. And General Mills among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Karen. Senate Democrats are trying to pressure Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to bring up a vote for a universal background check bill passed by the House earlier this year. Democrats took to the chamber's floor for about 5 hours last night to argue for the bill. Israel's two main political parties are deadlocked after national elections. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud and Benny Gantz's blue and white parties are currently tied. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets won. The Nationals and A's won. The Red Sox lost to the Giants 7-6. The Orioles lost. In the NFL, the Giants' Daniel Jones is preparing for Sunday's game. Jones will replace Eli Manning as starting quarterback. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're joined now by John Stoltzfus, Chief Investment Officer at Oppenheimer, as we await not just the Federal Reserve's rate decision, but its second repo operation of the week. Good morning, John. We heard some concerns among market participants about liquidity in the market. Are those concerns kind of coming home to roost now?
Well, I think it's you might say coming home to roost, but we also think they realistically they are part and parcel of what we have seen of a transition in terms of going moving from an analog to a digital society, whether it has to do with markets, economics, or even politics. The good thing is we think that our Federal Reserve, as well as central banks around the world, are more experienced than they've ever been before as a result of the 08 crisis. The structural changes that we have seen in terms of the way investment bank participants operate within the financial system is causing some of the tensions that we're seeing right now in terms of this repo story. But we think the Fed will be able to negotiate it. It will cause plenty of flap in terms of concerns, but we think they'll be able to navigate it.
How so? What does the Fed need to do to navigate this?
Well, we think near term, it looks like we get something that looks a bit like QE in this process. It's gonna put more pressure on the balance sheet of the Fed near term, likely. But we think the process will be effective in providing liquidity to the system. We don't think it leads to a crisis. We have over the last I've been in this business for 36 years, and what amazes me is how well the Fed has navigated the challenges over the last 10 years through three leaderships so far, and with increasing pressure from the administration, which we think is regrettable. But we think Powell's doing a good job here. I would say he's learning how to communicate a little bit better to the market. So let's see what happens today. We're looking for a 25 bips cut today. We think with no commitment that they're going to make any more, and very much as an as-see what's needed. We also think it's important to think here that what you're looking at, if we get a deal in the trade war, this will change this entire problem immediately, but fundamentally, things need to be addressed in terms of the structure that permits the what we saw yesterday, the distortions in the market.
Now, if we don't get further guidance from the Federal Reserve on the rate path, does there need to be clarity in terms of what adjustments to the balance sheet would need to look like in terms of the repo story?
I think it does need to be addressed, and I would believe that it would be forthcoming. I think that this is not Alan Greenspan's Federal Reserve. This is the legacy of Bernanke and Yellen, and the pressure that I think Jerome Powell is feeling to continue that type of transparency and governance in a process that gives the market a very good idea of what the Fed's going to do. So I'm expecting some kind of clarity from the Fed, but that notwithstanding, it is a work in progress, and it's all about this globalization and technology. It's not so much that they've come to roost, but essentially they have come of age, and they are processes that change everything how we execute everything that we do.
About a minute left here. Are you expecting that the Federal Reserve is going to continue cutting, or is it going to have to look forward into what develops in the trade war in order to make that decision?
I think it's the latter. They're going to have to consider what develops within the trade war, the challenges that are presented on a day-to-day basis, and move forward with that. I think it would be a mistake for them to commit to cutting as much as the market expects. I think it is as an as-needed basis.
That said, what is your expectation in terms of the rate path?
I think, you know, we got a 25 bips cut today, and then let's see how things move forward through the rest of the year. And I think that the Fed will maintain the course that it has delineated, since it distinctly pivoted for the market in terms of, at least in terms of clarity.
John Stoltzfus, thank you. John Stoltzfus is Chief Investment Officer at Oppenheimer. Again, the Federal Reserve announces its rate decision at 2 p.m. Wall Street time, followed by Chairman Powell's news conference at 2:30. Going to be very interesting to listen in on that, not just in terms of the rate path, but about what's happening with liquidity in terms of repo operations. Taking a look at the market ahead of all that, S&P futures are down 4 points, Dow futures down 26, and NASDAQ futures down almost 11. This is Bloomberg. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by the Jewish Communal Fund. JCF's donor-advised fund is the smart choice to manage your philanthropy. Open a JCF fund now. To lock in a 2019 tax deduction, visit jcfny.org.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Eisner Amper. Taxes are one of the certainties of life, but what worked for corporate taxpayers in the past may not work today. Eisner Amper can help. Visit EisnerAmper.com/tax certainty.
And we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are lower ahead of today's Federal Reserve decision. The betting on Wall Street has the Fed cutting its benchmark interest rate by a quarter point. And we get more from Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice.
The Fed eased for the first time in a decade in late July, opting for a quarter point cut. Bloomberg Economics anticipates the Fed will continue with quarter point increments until the 3-month 10-year Treasury yield is no longer inverted. Beyond today, our economists say look for Fed easing in October, December, and possibly early next year. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thanks. Meanwhile, the Fed's preparing a second blast of cash into U.S. money markets today after yesterday's first cash injection in a decade. The move came after a surge in short-term rates as Wall Street struggles to absorb record Treasury sales. Richard Jones is an FX and rate strategist for Bloomberg.
A lot of these idiosyncratic things came together. The Fed responded by injecting $75 billion via repo, and I think this is something that is going to continue. And I think it's something that might overshadow the actual Fed rate decision, because this caught a lot of investor attention, and they need to do something more systemic to deal with this lack of liquidity in the very short end of the market.
Overnight repurchase rates were being quoted around 4% for this morning, according to Jefferies.
In the UK, inflation fell to its lowest level since 2016. Consumer prices rose 1.7% in August from a year earlier. That's down from 2.1% in July.
On the corporate front, shares of FedEx are down more than 11% in early trading after the company slashed its profit forecast. We get more from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
The Courier's best-case scenario for adjusted earnings in the fiscal year ending in May, only $13 a share, a dollar short of the lowest of 25 analyst estimates compiled by Bloomberg. The company will deepen its cost-cutting drive to contend with the diminished expectations. CEO Fred Smith said performance continues to be negatively impacted by increasing trade tensions and policy uncertainty. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. And there's still no sign of progress as the United Auto Workers Union strike against General Motors enters its third day. GM has now cut off health care coverage for the striking workers. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 4 points, Dow futures down 25, NASDAQ futures down 11, 10-year Treasury up 8/32, yield 1.77%. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr has more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. 6 weeks after a pair of mass shootings killed more than 30 people, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says Congress remains in a holding pattern on gun control.
The president has already indicated he would veto the bill that came over from the House that the Speaker and the Democratic Senate leader called him about. So that's obviously not about getting an outcome.
On the other side of the aisle, the Senate minority leader is getting very restless. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has more on last night's Senate session.
Senator Chuck Schumer says it's time for Americans to speak up.
We need the 93% of Americans who support background checks to speak out. Call their legislators. Call Leader McConnell. Call President Trump. And tell them to support universal background checks.
McConnell, meanwhile, says he is still waiting for guidance from the White House as to what the president will sign. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
President Trump's former campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, was grilled before the House Judiciary Committee. In a contentious hearing yesterday, Lewandowski refused to answer questions about his dealings with the president, which led to exchanges such as this one between Lewandowski and Democrat Sheila Jackson Lee.
Again, Congresswoman, I recognize that the privilege is not mine, but I've been asked by the White House to... Congresswoman, I'd be happy to answer your question, or you can just have a conversation by yourself. But if you'd like to ask me a question, I'll be happy to answer.
I'm going to continue. The reason is
Then don't ask me a question if you don't want to hear my answer.
I'm reclaiming my time. This is a House judiciary, not a House party.
During a break from the hearing, Lewandowski confirmed that he is considering a run for the Senate from New Hampshire. Israel's two main political parties are deadlocked after national elections, with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu facing an uphill battle to keep his job. There are calls for a secular unity government between Netanyahu's Likud and Benny Gantz's blue and white parties, who are currently tied. A new poll shows former Vice President Joe Biden and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren have gained support of Democratic primary voters. According to the Wall Street Journal NBC News poll, Biden has 31%, while Warren has 25%. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's John Stanshower.
Nathan, there'll be champagne in the Yankee clubhouse tonight. The magic number to clinch the AL East is 1. It'll be their first division title since 2012. A win tonight would be their 100th of the season. They've done this despite a ton of injuries. Neither Luis Severino or Dellin Betances had thrown a pitch all season. Severino returned last night with 4 scoreless innings. Betances returned Sunday through only 8 pitches. Turns out on the last one, he hopped. Unsure if the inning was over, he tore his Achilles. Here's Aaron Boone.
Heartbroken for Dellin, and knowing him working so hard to get back to this point to be a factor for us, and to have him successfully debut for us the other day, and now this. I know I haven't got to talk to him yet since the news. I heard the news during the game. You know, our heart goes out to him, but clearly we just got to pick him up and, you know, look forward to seeing him in here and know he'll support us like he always does.
Yanks blanked the Angels 8-0. Gleyber Torres, a 3-run homer, is 38th of the year. In Denver, Pete Alonso belted his major league leading 48th. Mets beat the Rockies 6-1. Alonso needs 4 homers in the last 11 games to tie Aaron Judge's rookie record. Rookie Mike Yastrzemski homered for the Giants in Boston, where his grandfather Carl is a Red Sox legend. Since 2004, Eli Manning was the Giants starting quarterback for all but one game. The move to rookie Daniel Jones was always a matter of not if, but when. Turns out it is this Sunday at Tampa Bay. The Jets Sunday, a 23-point underdog at New England. The unheralded Luke Falk will be the Jet quarterback. Trevor Siemian's ankle injury is season-ending, so Falk will be the QB until Sam Darnold returns from mono. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stanshower. Nathan.
Okay, John, thank you. It is 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on how cancer-causing elements have ended up in Americans' blood pressure pills. Also in this week's issue, how David Swensen created a fortune for Yale University. Janet Lauren wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
So he has been the chief investment officer at Yale since 1985, which is a really long time. And if you think about what the world was like in 1985, Yale was mostly invested in stocks and bonds. And he really changed that world.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Time now for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, Nathan. Sources tell Bloomberg WeWork has made a small round of job cuts in a New York City unit that manages on-demand office rentals. The move was announced just hours after plans to delay an initial public stock offering. Sources say the dismissals affect fewer than 10 employees in the WeWork Now division. Boxcar, a service based in Chatham, New Jersey, is helping people find parking spaces by using an app. Users are able to search, reserve, and pay for parking. The spots are on private property in churches or business parking lots and at homes where residents rent out their driveways. A Norwalk City Council committee has voted to institute an Ask First policy for plastic straws in food and beverage businesses. Plastic stirrers will be banned. Establishments that provide plastic straws without being asked by customers first will be warned first and then fined for a second violation. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
All right, Ed, thanks. 5:39 on Wall Street, and Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WBBM in Chicago, the FAA is calling for a meeting with its counterparts from about 50 other countries to talk about progress on returning Boeing's grounded 737 MAX to service.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Boeing's CEO has been asked to testify before a House hearing in October.
I'm Caroline Hepke on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on the Supreme Court case that could decide the future of Boris Johnson's prime ministership.
I'm Ed Corey on WOAI in San Antonio. I'm reporting Toyota and one of its suppliers will invest a combined $791 million in Texas to build next-generation pickups.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're watching, fast fashion retailer Forever 21 in talks to give landlords a stake as part of a restructuring. Bloomberg News has learned the L.A.-based company is preparing to file for bankruptcy as soon as this month. A plan calls for Simon Property Group and Brookfield Property Partners to get part of the business, while Forever 21 co-founder Dowan Chang would retain some ownership. S&P futures down 4 points, Dow futures down 24, NASDAQ futures lower by 13.5 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. The Tri-State Business Report was brought to you by Virgin Atlantic. Over 300 hours of onboard entertainment, flatbeds for napping and afternoon tea. Daily nonstop flights to the UK in partnership with Delta Airlines.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Bonds are rallying globally while stocks drift as investors mark time until the Federal Reserve concludes its policy meeting today, at which officials are expected to cut interest rates again and possibly move further to calm overnight lending markets. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 4 points, Dow futures down 21, NASDAQ futures down about 12. The DAX in Germany is up 0.1% now. 10-year Treasury up 8/32, yield 1.77%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.71%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.9% or 53 cents at $58.81 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.2% or $3.30 at $15.10.10 an ounce. The euro 1.1047 against the dollar. The British pound 1.2459. And the yen is at 108.22. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says Congress remains in a holding pattern on gun control as lawmakers await proposals from the White House. Senate Democrats held the floor for 5 hours last night on the issue. A tropical storm formed in the Gulf of Mexico yesterday, and within an hour, it had slammed into the coast of Texas. Flash flood warnings were issued in the Houston area because of the remnants of Tropical Storm Imelda. India's cabinet has agreed to ban e-cigarette sales. In baseball, the Yankees shut out the Angels 8-0, and that brings the magic number for the Pinstripes to make the playoffs to 1. The Mets also won along with the Nationals and A's. The Red Sox lost to the Giants 7-6. The Orioles lost. And in the NFL, the Giants' Daniel Jones is preparing for Sunday's game under center in Tampa Bay. Jones will replace Eli Manning as starting quarterback. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts. in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael. Thank you. It's coming up to 5:49 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. It is all about the Fed today, with policymakers gathering in Washington for an interest rate decision and the New York Federal Reserve Bank preparing its second repo operation after yesterday's first in a decade. Let's unpack all this now with Bloomberg FX and rate strategist Richard Jones, who's with us from our studio in Berlin. Richard, always good to talk with you. What do you see behind the spikes in overnight rates that we've seen this week?
Hey, good morning, Nathan. Well, I think on Monday there was a lot of what I'd call idiosyncratic dynamics occurring, and it created, if you excuse the metaphor, a perfect storm in the funding markets. I mean, we had the settlement of Treasury coupon auctions. We had corporate tax payments, quarterly corporate tax payments, falling on that day. And so the demand for U.S. dollar funding surged, and the market just wasn't – there wasn't enough liquidity in the market for that to happen. I spoke to a couple of money market traders, people I used to work with, and they said that the effect of the Treasury coupon auction, the impact of that, could have accounted for like – as much as a net drain of $250 billion from the system on Monday. And so it's no wonder that there was a squeeze, and it actually filtered into Tuesday as well. And the Fed actually responded to that by doing a repo and providing, I think they offered to provide $75 billion in funding, and that sort of got the yields under control. And I think they're going to do the same thing again today. Now, the thing that I think is there's a couple of things from this. The good thing is that the Fed acted and they were able to get it under control. And it shows that they do have the tools in their box to be able to deal with this kind of stuff. The thing that isn't so great is that the way they did it was very reactive rather than proactive. And also, I think it was a little bit clumsy the way it was handled. And so therefore, I expect that Jay Powell tonight at the press conference will be asked about this, and will be asked whether the money markets will continue to be liquid and function smoothly, and what the Fed's plans are to ensure that.
When you talk about idiosyncratic elements coming together, you mentioned the coupon auction, the corporate taxes coming due. On top of all that, we had this oil supply disruption over the weekend. Could that have been part of the idiosyncrasy you're seeing here?
No, I definitely think it could, Nathan, because one of the things that I'm speaking to ex-money market colleagues, Saudi Arabia is generally awash with U.S. dollar liquidity, and as a result of that, they're usually a net provider of dollar funding to the market on a day-to-day basis. That's just one of the quirks of that market, is that because there's so much dollar liquidity in Saudi Arabia, they are able to provide dollar funding to the market on a day-to-day basis. It's not unimaginable that some of those excess funds that the Saudis usually are able to lend to the markets was put to use with other things, given the stress on the oil facilities there. It really was a talking point amongst money market participants on Monday that perhaps the dislocation in Saudi Arabia did lead to and was an additional force behind driving U.S. dollar funding yields higher on Monday.
So does this point to systemic problems in the monetary supply for the global economy?
Well, I think it points to an embedded demand in the markets for dollar funding that is not being met when we have that embedded demand and idiosyncratic things happening at the same time. As a result, I think the Fed has to sort of look at this situation and say, do we need to provide more liquidity to the markets? The answer to that is probably yes. Looking further beyond that, does it mean that the Fed has to expand its balance sheet? That's a big question. There are schools of thought that say that, yes, the Fed will have to expand its balance sheet. And, of course, this might eventually lead to additional QE.
So what does that look like? What are market participants telling you in terms of the return of QE?
Well, it's not imminent, of course. Nobody is actually calling for it to happen anytime soon. But this was a really, really striking event in the money markets this week. It's not isolated. And these situations where you have idiosyncratic dynamics, in addition to that elevated what I call embedded demand in the market for dollar funding. That's not going to go away. This is going to carry on. And therefore, the Fed's going to have to address that. They can probably address it in the short term using the repo markets, but in the longer term, they have to ask the question, is that do we structurally need to be providing more liquidity beyond what we're doing on a makeshift basis in the repo market? A lot of people are thinking that they'll have to, and that will eventually lead to balance sheet expansion and eventually more QE.
Bloomberg FX and rate strategist Richard Jones with us from Berlin. Richard, always good talking with you. And it's going to be very fascinating to hear what Fed Chairman Powell has to say after that rate decision at 2 p.m. Wall Street time, in addition to the repo operation from the New York Fed coming up in the 8 a.m. hour on Wall Street. We're going to have full coverage of all of it for you today here on Bloomberg Radio. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute resolve faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Democrats are moving to block the Trump administration's proposed rollbacks of the Endangered Species Act. Even so, the Protect America's Wildlife and Fish in Need of Protection Act stands virtually no chance of becoming law this Congress. A federal district court judge has tossed out a Trump administration scheme to lower how much off-campus hospital-based clinics get paid for testing Medicare patients. And Home Depot will stop selling rugs and carpets containing PFAS, a group of highly persistent chemicals.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, another legal development we're following. Purdue Pharma filing for bankruptcy with a more than $10 billion plan to short-circuit lawsuits against the company and its owners, the Sackler family. It's a plan designed to settle claims that Purdue fueled the opioid epidemic by illegally pushing sales of its OxyContin painkiller. For more on this story, Bloomberg's Jun Grasso speaks with the University of Michigan law professor Eric Gordon.
It wants to resolve the suits not just against Purdue and Purdue's related companies, but very importantly, the Sackler family personally. And when you think about Purdue, although they might be legally separated from the Sackler family, in fact, the Sackler family controls it. So they just want to end this. And, the allegations from some of the attorney generals who are not too happy with the proposal is the Sacklers want to be able to walk away with billions of dollars of their fortune intact.
So 48 states have court actions against Purdue in some forum. Half have refused to sign on to the settlement, including California and New York. So where does a settlement that doesn't even have a majority of the states on board leave the bankruptcy?
I think the strategy is going to be to whittle away on the states that have not agreed. That the bankruptcy is going to delay things for the states. The argument's going to be, hey, the states that are holding out, wouldn't it be better to get some money into your budget, into your city's budgets now rather than 10 years from now? Oh, look, we'll sweeten the pot a little bit and come on over. But, 50-50, it's going to be really tough for the judge to force the holdouts to take a settlement they don't want.
And that's University of Michigan law professor Eric Gordon speaking with Bloomberg's Jun Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. Futures this morning lower. S&P futures down about 5 points. Dow futures down 28. NASDAQ futures down 12. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.